Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your case.
Hi, welcome to Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. I'm Heather, and I'm the chair of this week's podcast, and what an exciting episode this is going to be. This week, I'm joined here by Steph, Linda, and Nicola.
Hello.
Hi.
But we will be hearing from Teresa. This week, Nicola will be asking us to name the novel. Teresa will be reading her from her work in progress. We'll all be talking about our plans for the summer break, and we'll be reviewing all of our episodes up to date. But most excitingly, we'll be announcing the winner of our short story competition. I'll go over first of all to Nicola, who's going to ask us to
name the novel.
I've got a good one for you this week, girls. Let's see if you get it. Okay, first clue. It was one of the UK's top 100 novels. It was published in 1990, but set in 1970s England. It won the Whitbread Award and has been translated into 20 languages.
That does nothing for me.
No. Okay, second clue. It was made into a four-part BBC series in 1993 with a soundtrack by David Bowie.
Oh.
Still none the wiser.
That's interesting.
Okay, no?
Nothing.
The first page starts, "My name is Karim Amir, and I am an Englishman born and bred, almost."
Well, you stopped me.
Yes.
And everybody else is sitting here looking.
Oh, well, is it something about a laundrette?
No, you're thinking of My Beautiful Laundrette.
Yes.
No, I think it might. That was it. It came out about the same time as that.
Right. Is it Bride and Prejudice or something like that?
Buddha of Suburbia.
Oh, of course.
Buddha of Suburbia.
I think it's Hanif Qureshi, isn't it? Hanif Qureshi.
It won the Whitbread Award for the best first novel.
Well, I never heard of it.
No. Well, I can recommend the BBC series because I remember watching that and really enjoying it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for that, Nicola. Now we're going to listen to Teresa reading from her work in progress. She's pre-recorded this for us.
So this is the beginning of a story called Ronella the Goat Girl. And I've written this story with the plan to enter a competition, which closes, the closing date is in September. And the brief for the competition was really interesting because it has to be an episode from a children's story with a 12-year-old protagonist. There has to be some dialogue with a sidekick. But the main thing is it's not to be in a realistic setting. It can be in a magical setting, a fantasy setting, a dystopian setting, and so on. And I've chosen dystopian. So this is the opening of the story. "Come on, Larkin." Ronella reached down and gripped the smaller girl's wrist, pulling her up over the rock. "We're not supposed to come here." "It's fine. Look how happy the goats are." The two sisters looked around the wide plain. Both were dressed in practical trousers, sweat-stained shirts, and leather boots. Bows were slung across their bodies, and on their shoulders they carried elaborately embroidered quivers, each holding a supply of sharp little arrows. The goats had already spread out over the grassy meadow, chewing on the green leaves. "What about longheads?" "They don't come here. Look, the mountain is still between us." Ronella was right. Somehow, the higher you climbed, the higher the mountain looked. "There might be other unextincts." "I've been here before, it's fine, and we've got our weapons. Come on, Nesta will guard the goats, let's play in the cave." The dog Nesta had found a shady spot under a walnut tree. He looked up with watery eyes when he heard his name. Ronella grabbed Larkin's hand again and set off running towards a cliff face. Their heavy boots crushed flowers and herbs so that the smell of thyme ran with them. "Grandpa says the big cats hunt up here." "Don't worry, you're too small and skinny to interest them. You're not even snack-sized to a sabre-tooth." "You think you're funny, but you're not," Larkin pouted. "So why are you smiling?" Ronella pulled her little sister close and kissed her head. "I want to show you the cave." Ronella's most treasured possession was a relic from the before time. It was a torch that made its own electricity when you squeezed and released the handle. There were still people around who could make batteries, but they were far away and wanted lots of favours for them. In Grandpa Leo's time, batteries and stuff were so cheap, people used them up and threw them away. Ronella knew her torch would probably stop working one day. Old things were usually badly made, but for now she pulled it from her belt and started to squeeze. It made a kind of wheezy squeak as she worked, but the light came on just like magic. It felt cooler already in the overhang of rock, and the cave would be colder still. Ronella held Larkin's hand and pointed the torch in front of her as they entered the mouth of the cave. The light bounced off the walls as she shone it around. It caught a glint near the floor. "There's something there!" Larkin gripped Ronella's hand tightly. They could hear a scratching sound. Ronella swung the torch back down until she caught a pair of unblinking yellow eyes. Larkin was ready to run, but Ronella kept tight hold of her. She moved the torch to see what kind of creature owned the eyes. A ribbon-like tongue flicked out, tasting the air. "It's a lizard," she said, and as she did, the creature dragged itself past them and out of the mouth of the cave. The last thing to disappear was its muscular tail sweeping the ground behind it. "Is it an unextinct?" Larkin asked. "It must be. Grandpa said they only used to get small lizards round here." A muffled yapping reached them from outside. "What's wrong with Nestor?" The dog was barking and snarling, his fierce, "stay away from my goat's bark." Ronella stashed her torch in her belt and ran out of the cave, pulling Larkin behind her. For a moment she was blinded by the sunlight, but quickly her eyes adjusted. She saw Nestor baring his teeth at a boy who held a spear poised to throw. He was the strangest boy she'd ever seen. His legs were short and thick with muscles. His chest flared out under his elbows. His rust-coloured hair covered a head that was unmistakably long at the back. Swifter than thought, Ronella dropped Larkin's hand and was crouched with an arrow in her bow.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Jeopardy.
I so want to know more. Unextincts is the best word I've heard from
I love time. That. Yeah. And the long heads, he's obviously a long head.
So that's a Neanderthal, is it?
Yes, yeah. It is. Yeah. Well picked up. Very good.
I love the mix. The mix, it feels like it's old fashioned, but then you're swiftly made aware that it's in the future and something weird has happened. So they've got some sort of remnant of technology, but not very much.
So something's happened to change it.
I think if the catastrophe occurs, we won't be cavemen, will we? We'll still have technology and knowledge and things. It's just what will go and what will stay is what you have to decide when you're thinking about.
I love the names too, Ronella, Larkin, and Nestor.
Yes.
I know somebody called Ronella, and it's a name that I like a lot. And I don't know where Larkin came from.
I just think of Ma and Pa Larkin in The Darling Buds of May. Yeah. They were Larkins, weren't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a great name for a child, Larkin.
I can really see that this is going to be something that it would be young adults and grown-ups would love to read it too. It's already shaped. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of sci-fi and dystopian stuff, and it sounds like it's shaping up really well.
There's a couple of things that I thought were really... that I really liked, and that was the smells and the sounds. You've got the smells of herbs running with them, which I thought was a great way of saying it, and the wheezy squeak when she was squeezing the handle of the torch. I like that too. That all kind of just adds layers to it, doesn't it? There was one tiny bit when I thought there's a slight shift of point of view when it said Larkin was ready to run, because I thought until then you were sitting on Ronella's shoulder. And so Ronella would have felt Larkin pull, and she would have then held her tighter rather than knowing she was ready to run. So that was, but it's a minor thing, really minor thing. Mm-hmm. And initially, when you said bows across their shoulders, I just had this vision of big ribbons on their back.
Yes, that's the problem, isn't it?
But I soon realised you meant bows, because you mentioned the quivers in the next
they're not those kind
sentence.
Of girls, Stephanie.
No, I know, but that was my very first thing. Bows on their backs.
It's,
you know?
It's a problem, isn't it? It's a problem,
No, I think that's lovely. It's lovely. And you've got till September to get this work.
Yeah, and obviously I will be asking you guys to read the whole thing.
Can't wait.
Not on the podcast, because it would be too long at 2,000 words for the podcast, and give me your feedback on that.
If anybody wants to read it, then... they could ask on the Facebook group if they could have it and you might send it to them.
Oh, I might.
There you go.
I'm astonished how much you showed in 600 words. It is really very well done.
Next is our writing life and the goals for our summer. As you've gathered, we're going to take a little break and come back again in September. So I'll ask the group, Linda, what are your plans for the summer?
Oh, funny you should ask, Heather. I have been really struggling for a little bit because, I've been writing as a pantser, let's say, not having an outline. And I've reached a point where I have many, many scenes and a lot of material, and I'm not sure, I haven't written them in a chronological way. So I have to now go back and fill the gaps. So I've been doing a lot of reading about how to outline because I really don't like doing that. And different ways that you could approach that with the same effect. And I found a couple I think that I'm going to try. And so I'll figure out where my scenes go and what needs to go that hasn't been there yet. And hopefully by the end of the summer, I'll have a very large piece of work all put together. I procrastinated a lot this week, and I used that time. my tool of procrastination was going into my computer and trying to declutter some of my files, in particular gathering every Mary Magdalene bit and piece I had on old external drives and on the computer. And now I have about 300 pages worth of Mary Magdalene, but much of it, probably two-thirds at least, is repetition. So I'll have to go back and, sometimes I changed her name and other ones I've changed. In some, the personalities were a little different. So that's what I'm doing this summer. I'm going to go back and organize.
Brilliant.
For you. Steph. Well, I am really at the final hurdle. I have got to make my synopsis sing on one page. I have to do 12-point font, 1.5-line spacing, and make it fit on one page.
Oh.
Because if I can't tell a literary agent or a publisher what this book's about in 300 words, then I don't deserve to have written it. So that's what I'm going to be absolutely nailing that synopsis.
All right.
And I've set myself a little goal that through August I will submit to 10 literary agents. Because it's a numbers game. So I don't know whether to submit to 2.5 a week or throughout August. But no, I'd like to think by the end of August I'll have got it out to 10 at the rate of a couple a week.
Mm-hmm.
And just see what gives. But obviously I need to choose who I'm going to send it to very carefully, because I've got to be comfortable that they're people that will kind of get what I'm writing about and for whom it's the sort of genre that they might go with. So watch this space. I'll let you know how it's gone at the end of the summer.
Okay, thank you. Nicola?
Well, hopefully, Steph, that you will be spelling the word synopsis at the top of your page correctly. Myself, who then sent it into a creative writing course. But the good news is that they sent out an email to say that they were delaying by a week the announcement of whether anyone had got into the course or not. So I went straight back and said, oh, that's marvellous. Is there any chance I can because somehow the spell check didn't pick it up and my brain didn't pick it up that I'd spelt the word synopsis wrong. And they came back and they said, really, don't worry about that. That's not going to make any difference at all. We overlook spelling errors because we know they can be fixed. So it's the writing we're looking for, not the spelling. So I thought, thank the Lord for that.
Yeah.
Which has given me a little bit of a Philippe in the motivation incentive department. I'm waiting to hear the results of that. In terms of writing anything at all, I've just been not very motivated at all, and I don't know why. No idea. I've got a lot more time on my hands over August, though, because I'm not editing this podcast. My own podcast, business podcast, is not happening over August. We're taking a complete break. So I'm hoping that that will, extra time, which is about 6 hours a week, will give me, perhaps I'll get bored enough to want to write. That's what I'm hoping.
Anyway. And what are you going to be up to, Emma?
Well, a friend of ours has read my journal and made a few comments, but has been very positive about it and very complimentary about it.
Are you talking about the road trip?
The road trip, okay, yes, which yeah. I am renaming the Peak District to the Peloponnese.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And I've got a few things where apparently I've used and a little often, mm-hmm. or a little too often, and I've put that when I mean then and what yeah. when I mean when and but very, very small things. And she has also researched a company who will print it for me, basically.
Oh, right.
And they will, I can pay for somebody to format it and that sort of thing and get the pictures in and mm-hmm. all of that. It will cost. But my first attempt will be to actually make some copies of it.
To give as gifts.
To give as gifts.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens from there. Fantastic. So that's
your summer project.
Summer project.
Yeah. Fantastic. And Teresa's left us some details of what she's going to be up to this summer as well. Do you want to listen to that?
My goals for this summer. The work in progress you heard earlier, I want to continue working on that. That's to enter a competition, which has a closing date in September. So I want to complete that project. It's a children's fiction competition. Having been on holiday in Crete, I've got two or three ideas for travel articles. So I'll be having a go at those as well over the summer.
Okay, so we've had 37 episodes now, and I just
wondered... Well, this is our 38th, isn't it?
Great.
Yeah. Yes, it is. So I just wondered if anybody would like to say, or not, their favourite bits or what they've enjoyed about it.
Well, we've had a ball, we've had a laugh.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
We had some challenges early on with our... sounded like we were in a biscuit tin. And we talked over each other a lot.
Yeah.
But I think we're a lot better now.
Yeah, we are.
We're much more organised. But, yeah, we certainly had a lot of fun on the way. And I remember recording the episode, which was about writing for children, mm-hmm. where we interviewed Chris Heath about his The World According to Grandpa series of books. And we included interviews with children on that. And I was lucky enough to edit that episode. And I can tell the listeners that Linda and her grandchildren sounded extraordinarily erudite, but as everybody else around the table will confirm, boy, oh boy, was that hard work, because Linda just kept asking them to repeat things and tell her the publisher and the ISBN number and didn't hear what they were saying and got their names wrong. Oh, my word. God, yeah. And when we listened to that back, did we laugh or did we laugh?
Yeah.
We were in hysterics. And, you know, it's not often that I get the giggles, but I just could not speak for laughing, Linda. Sorry to laugh at you, but, oh, my word, what fun we had. What fun we had on that episode.
Oh, yeah, that was great. And you guys threatened to... do a bloopers outtake.
Yeah. Lucky for you, okay. it's too hard to do.
Too much time.
Maybe I'll use some time in the summer to do it. Yeah.
I'm just saying, yeah. Quinlan, could you repeat that? Oh, Isabel, I'm so sorry. Of course you're Isabel. That was terrible. Well, my favorite parts of all of the episodes... and there are many of them, is all of our laughter. I love those episodes where we're just absolutely laughing our way through. And we do that a lot. I enjoy so much listening to the fun we're having doing this. I hope other people are enjoying that as well. But it's this has really become a big part of my life. I love it. I love doing it. Love being part of the group. And just laughing and having such a great time while we're recording. It's wonderful.
And I love Mary Magdalene as well. Yeah. She's become very much part of my life.
Oh, yeah.
I'm astonished that we sat down at a table somewhere, I can't even remember where it was, and had the idea, and then, you know, the organisational skills of Steph and Teresa being so enthusiastic at the beginning as well. And, you know, just, I love hearing the interviews with the authors. I love to hear their writing process and how they got published. And it's a bit like a sort of hero's journey every time for me when I hear when I hear their story. And then, of course, there was the episode where we talked about writing sex and erotica, and that was just the funniest episode. And then that poor woman not being able to listen to it because her company server would have blocked it or something. But I actually can't believe we're up to episode 38. I mean, when you consider that 95% of podcasts never make it past episode 7.
Are you kidding?
We've done really, really well. So I'm really, really proud of everyone. And it's been great fun for me. What about you, Heather?
Unfortunately, I still feel as though a little bit I'm playing catch-up because I had 5 months at home. Unable to join in. And maybe I've had little moments where I thought, do I want to do this? But I think I'm getting easier and better and enjoying it and laughing along with everybody else. It's been fun.
Which bits do you like best?
I think it's just what Linda said, really. It's meeting with six of us and having a laugh and, you know, sort of getting to know each other even better than we did before. And laughter, I think, is the best thing.
And I also love the Facebook group. We've got some great people in there.
Yes.
Great contributions.
Right.
You know, every week somebody puts some sort of meme. Is it called a meme?
Yes, memes.
They put a meme up or a cartoon or about something that provokes thoughts. And the other week I put up a couple of months ago now, I put up a thing about this word called Balter, B-A-L-T-R, and said try and use it in context. And we had some great responses from people.
Yeah.
And there was one I remember from Sally, one of our listeners, and she said about, she was a woman who, she bolted, she clearly had Prosecco in her veins, something like that. So music in her heart and Prosecco in her veins, I thought was masterful. So, you know, just the community of people on Facebook that we've managed to generate, I'm loving them. Really enjoying.
There's several hundred people in that.
Yeah, really enjoying.
And when you think of thousands of people around the world listening to us, when we're just sitting in Steph's basement here,
having a chat,
because it's the place we found has got the best sound and acoustics.
And it's a wonderful place for Wilfred Owen.
Yes.
Our puppy podcaster here.
He's all curled up, ignoring
us. You would never know he's here, readers and listeners.
My dear readers.
Dear reader, I married him. I remember that one.
And I also I've loved Teresa's words of the week. They've been great fun too. I've really enjoyed those. So
speaking of the people on Facebook coming in, at some point some time ago I asked for suggestions about how Eli lost the money that he and Mary Magdalene had for travel, and some of you wrote in with some great suggestions. And so when we come back from the summer, I will have completed that, and I am going to use
Hooray! Hooray! That's brilliant.
I'll be using those suggestions.
Brilliant. Talk about a cliffhanger.
That will bring us all back in September, Linda, to find out what happened to the money.
And we're coming back on the first Monday in September, is that right?
We are, So we'll be back on the 3rd of September.
I love getting responses from the readers on Facebook. I love getting responses.
So we look forward to hearing from everybody out there as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, so here we are. And about to announce our competition winner.
Drum roll.
We had a tough time making a decision, but I'm delighted to announce that Alison Branning is our competition winner.
Congratulations.
And there will be a bag of goodies on its way to Alison. A Right Club, the podcast, canvas book bag filled with books donated by our guest authors, items of stationery donated by some of us. All sorts of goodies. In fact, I'm quite jealous that she's going to be getting that bag. Her story was called Driven Like the Snow, and I'll just read you the opening couple of paragraphs.
Okay.
On the way back from the funeral, Jessie cried for the first time since she'd killed her husband in the car crash. Driving to the wake, she had passed the oak tree with its buttresses of cellophane-wrapped flowers, its garland of yellow ribbons, its gaping wound where the car had been extracted. Ray loved yellow. Never mind that song, Tie a Yellow Ribbon, was about someone coming out of jail. Ray's best friend Clarkie had insisted. It's what he would have wanted, Ray, yellow. He would have wanted everyone to wear rugby kit or bright clothes for the funeral too. Clarkie said, and his mates had agreed, Ray hated black, hated miserable things, melancholy, sorrow. No time for it. Life's for living, he used to say. Cheer up, love. And now he was dead. Jessie had worn black lace. She wasn't sorry about it, but she got some looks for sure when she turned up at the funeral like an advert for Scottish Widows. Still, she was the wife, and they let it go. Grief does funny things, they said. Now later, and lying in the bath at home, she felt the water wash over her, felt it wash away all her sins. Mea culpa. The coroner had declared an accidental death. She was off the hook. But deep down she knew it was her fault. His friends blamed her too. Of course, they put their muscular rugby-playing arms around her and consoled her. Ray hated wearing a seatbelt, they agreed. He was never the sort of man to be told what to do. No. And who knew the airbag would fail as well? She shouldn't blame herself, but she did, and so did they. That's the opening couple of paragraphs.
Gripping, isn't it?
I love the first line. She cried for the first time since she killed her husband.
Yeah, really draws you in, doesn't it? Yeah, absolutely.
We're almost at the end of our podcast, but first, Steph and Caroline England will tell us what's on their bedside tables.
Caroline England, author of Beneath the Skin and My Husband's Lies, what's on your bedside table?
Hi, Steph. Right, on my bedside table, I've got Kate Atkinson's A God in Ruins. I'm only halfway through, I have to confess. I had a holiday, and it's the only time you really get time to get into a big, thick, chunky book. But I read it because I'd already read on the last holiday, Life After Life. And I just adore Kate Atkinson books. And foolishly, I didn't even know they were connected, but it's about the same family, the Todd family. And this book follows Teddy Todd's life. It's hard to say. And I'm just absolutely loving it. It's brilliant. And she's an author who can get away with having on one page a different timeline, three different points of view. And it's just that you go with it. You don't get confused. And that's just a credit to what a wonderful author she is.
Well, what's on my bedside table is, well, I've practically finished it. It's just brilliant. I was going to save it for my summer off, but because I thought it was a good summer read, but I couldn't wait. So I'm reading Aisha Mackay's Killing It. Yeah. And you remember we interviewed Aisha a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. It's very easy to read. It's funny. It's kind of James Bond meets Net Mum. You know, it's lovely. You know, baby food mixed up with the Glock and the nappy bag and that kind of thing. You'll love it. I'm really enjoying it.
Great. Thank you. That was Write Club, the podcast. Join us again in September after our summer break. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher or Radio Public so every new show is automatically delivered wherever you want it. Join our Facebook group to search for Write Club, the podcast. And please leave a review. And do tell your friends about the club. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. See you in September.
Have a great summer.
Yeah.